So what was your name, man?
Kyle Johnston.
Kyle Johnston. You from around here?
Yeah, I grew up in Texas City. So that's this is kind of cool that most of the podcasts I've done have just been like strictly about wine. And so I know we're going to like talk some about that with Hack, but it's just like a conversation, right? Amongst
yeah.
dudes.
Yeah. We wanted to talk about porn a little bit.
Okay.
I don't know how you feel about that.
I mean,
he's going
to want to hear this.
Now, but we normally just, just for our listeners and viewers, like, just a quick introduction of who you are and what you do.
Yeah. So, Kyle Johnston, I'm a dad, I'm a husband, and, I'm a winemaker. I run a Hack Winery over in Santa Fe, Texas. We've got, 3 acres over there of Blanc du Bois that we, may need to replant soon because Winter Storm Uri killed everything. And then we've got Odin's Table up at the Renaissance Festival. So that's kind of what I'm gearing up for. We're just getting out of our harvest right now. We did about 120 tons of fruit out of Texas this year. And we've got our last 5 tons coming next week. And then we'll be able to kind of shift into Odin's Table and then getting ready for that. I do curate five tastings a day that every day that the fair is open.
That's so nuts.
Should be fun.
And you weren't always a winemaker. So how did this all begin?
Yeah. So my grandfather was best friends with Raymond, the founder of the winery. And so I actually grew up working at the winery. When they would bottle, I'd come over and help my grandfather, him and all his cronies. And so that was kind of my introduction. And there was a vent that went down to the cellar below where they had some barrel storage. And I just remember like where I was at, that I was just getting this draft of like this wine smell. And that stuck with me. That resonated with me. And so went to undergrad at SMU in Dallas and, you know, Bachelor of Arts and, can you cuss on this?
Yeah. Fuck.
Bachelor of Arts and fuck all, you know, fucking off. And did commercial real estate right out of school for like 3 years. And, you know, you have that moment of like, I'm either going to dive into this or I got to make a change. And it was kind of like, I'm going to be miserable if I keep doing this. You know, you're paying your bills. It is what it is. But you're not, there's nothing satisfying or gratifying about that, or it just wasn't for me, you know? So I went back to school, Texas Tech, studied making wine and growing grapes. Interned while I was in school at McPherson Cellars.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but there's a course, there's a program for making wine.
Yeah, Texas Tech has the umbrella was horticulture, but you can specialize in what's called viticulture and enology. And so, yeah, viticulture is like all the science behind growing grapes, and enology is all the science behind making wine.
Wow. And, damn, man.
Yeah, so I got a master's in horticulture, specialized in V&E, and went to the Hill Country and made wine after that, Fredericksburg, and that was dope because we got married. I graduated, and then we moved to Hill Country in like within 2 weeks, and did that for 2 years. And then one of my old professors reached out to me, wanted me to develop a new winery for him and some other investors out of Abilene, a bunch of physicians. And it was kind of one of those like build it and they will come kind of things. And for me, it was kind of like, all right, I got to move to bumfucked Egypt to this small town, Coleman, Texas. No shout out there. Like
my parents live there.
No way.
They have land out there.
Coleman, Texas?
Well, in Winters. But I have family that own a ranch in Coleman, and then two different families that own land in Winters.
There's actually a good pizzeria there.
Really?
Yeah.
What's it called?
Coleman?
Rancho Pizzeria. Rancho
I'm going to check it out.
Rancho Pizzeria, I mean.
Is that the?
That's actually a really legit place.
That's like the only thing that must be there. There's a steakhouse out there that's pretty good, too.
That's actually called Rancho Loma.
Okay.
So the winery ended up, they kind of rode on the coattails of Rancho Loma's reputation, and they named the winery Rancho Loma Vineyards. And we had the winery there. It was awesome. Did it for 2 years. It had a kid. And then you kind of start like, all right, am I going to raise my kid in this town? Or, you know, what's the next step here? And so I reached out to one of the other growers. Actually, they reached out to me, and they were looking for a winemaker. And so I went back up to the High Plains to manage a custom crush facility, which is, you know, you have all those wineries down in Fredericksburg. They don't grow all the grapes down there, right? They just, that's where all the tourism is. All the grapes are grown up in the High Plains, the majority of them. And they contract the fruit, and then they would send the fruit to me, make the wine, bottle it, and I'd ship it back down to them. Because a lot of those wineries don't have the production space to make all the wine that they need to meet the demand that they have down there. So that's, I did that. And then fast forward 2 more years, it's kind of like 2 years here, 2 years there, 2 years here. And then where it was February of 2020, and Raymond was actually up visiting my facility, and he let me know that he was going to be putting the winery up for sale. And so I thought it was interesting. I was already kind of developing something from scratch in kind of like the North Houston area with my brother's old high school roommate or college roommate, and they played football together. And so he actually called me 2 days later and was like, hey, I just got an email from this commercial broker that I've bought another business from. And it's saying that there's this winery for sale down in Texas, down South Texas. It's like, is it Hack? I was like, yes. And so we pulled the financials, looked at it, and decided just to pivot. And, you know, this was a little more turnkey, and it just worked out. There's several other like cool connections, but I don't know how much time do we have.
Plenty of time. It's a good story. That's why I asked. It's the people that owned Hack Winery. I mean, from inception, right? They owned it forever. That's their last name. They just wanted to retire, and then y'all grouped up and took it over, and have done a lot of really good renovations and things. Yeah, thanks. And it looks amazing. I don't think a lot of people know it's out there almost, because I'm like, you know, you can get a little piece of Fredericksburg and Santa Fe. So
we're trying to get that, you know, get the word out, and it's doing crazy stuff like Renaissance Festival. I mean, we're not on this wine road, right? In order to go to the winery, like, you're intentionally going to the winery. You're not passing it and being like, oh shit, look at that. Let's go have some wine.
It's in a neighborhood.
Yeah.
It's the thing that blows my mind. It's like, you don't, I feel like you don't see that no more, because it's like there's commercial land and residential, but it's like, it's just in a neighborhood, and which isn't bad. But like you said, you're not just going to pass by it.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of people are, you know, questioning their MapQuest or whatever, you know, whatever it is they're following. It's like, where is this taking us? You know, because you go down T, and it looks like, you know, you're about to get Texas Chainsaw Massacred. So, you know,
that's exactly what it looks like.
But
how are y'all like differentiating the business now from what it was in the past? Like, I know you're posting on social media, which is awesome. Those videos look good. But I guess what's kind of the vision of,
man, it's weird,
making it new.
Yeah, it's weird taking over a business, a small business that's been there for 20 years. And, you know, Raymond and Gladys, they built up such a brand and have such a recognition, and we wanted to kind of like just build on top of that. But at the same time, myself and my partners, we're kind of like operating at a different pace. And so it's this weird dynamic, right? You have all these people that are kind of been on cruise control in a way, like they had everything figured out. They knew what worked for them, what they, you know, as far as like what their ambitions were as a company. And then, you know, we came in, and instead of kind of having this like gestation period where of getting everyone acclimated to what we want to do and everything, we, you know, in hindsight, we maybe should have had a little bit more of that, but we just kind of hit the ground running. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's weird when that, you know, when that happens, it kind of starts to weed people out in a way, you know, because you have, you know, we had like 30, 35 employees when we took over. And some of them kind of get on board what you're doing. You know, there's like that initial excitement, you know, these guys coming in, there's a new energy, but then like we didn't take the gas, you know, our foot off the pedal. We're just like, and it's hard when you're going full steam for a long time. People start kind of jumping ship or poisoning the well. They're like, man, I don't know about these guys. Like, they're going a little too hard. Like, I don't know if it's good for this business. And at the end of the day, it's like myself and all the other owners are go-getters. Like, I don't know what's the word for it. Like,
no, it's just change.
It's that,
right?
It's that Mamba mentality kind of thing. You know, it's we have high expectations.
Yeah.
Not just for ourselves, but for the business. And, you know, we want it to be successful. We're going to do what we need to do. But, yeah, I mean, we came in, we renovated the cellar. So now that's like a badass venue for all kinds of different stuff. You know, we've had everything from 60th anniversary parties to gender reveals and bachelorette parties. And then
you have yoga too, right? Like,
yeah, we did yoga, sound baths.
Yeah.
We do drum circles now.
What's that?
Yeah, we do a full moon drum circle.
Circle.
Yeah, okay. That's like what we did at that training.
Yeah. They do that. Dude, yeah. That's pretty badass.
Every full moon, I'm trying to do it out there. So
what makes the full moon?
I was born on a full moon, and so was the Katrina, the chick that we kind of partner with on. We were talking. I was like, man, I want to have a drum circle. And we were kind of thinking about when to do it. And somehow we got on the conversation of the full moon, and she was also born on a full moon. We're like, let's do it on full moon. Every full moon, let's have a drum circle. So we have instruments. People can come out. And for me, it's just like a way to clock out, you know, because I feel like my head's always ringing. Like, I'm always thinking, going, and, you know, when you're around a fire beating on a drum, all that kind of gets quiet in a way. Mm-hmm. So it's, for me, it's an escape.
I'm gonna have to get out there with you. I have a djembe too, because I got a Ranner, and I got kind of addicted to it. But it's so fun being in the drum circle and having a few people and adding something new every once in a while. You start to get in that rhythm, and you hear ta 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 ta. You're like, oh, who did that? And then you're like, duh, duh.
Dude,
and it's like you're creating this sound, and it's like, and you don't even know where it's coming from at a time. You get so zoned out, you don't even know what your hands are doing. It's
in a trance almost.
It's really special.
It is, and it's crazy when you have that many people. Like, and it may start just with a shaker. You know, someone's just doing a shake, and then you have all these people kind of tying into that, and then when everybody kind of hits that sync, and it's like an addiction almost. Like, everybody's plugged in. And you're on like this other plane,
and you're like communicating without words.
Yeah,
because it's like I think how they explain jazz. It's like when you know jazz, you can start just adding these things, and like people are like, okay, I know what you're doing here. I'm gonna follow you a little bit, or I'm gonna go the other way. It is
like that movie Soul, where you know, when he's like playing the piano, and all of a sudden he's just like in that ethereal plane.
Yeah, that's a really good movie, by the way. I don't think it's like that popular.
It's a little underrated.
It's underrated, is what I was looking for. That's a really good movie to really explain that space.
Good life lessons there. I like how they kind of dive into the afterlife. Their version of the afterlife.
Is this a Netflix movie or what?
Is it Disney?
It's Pixar. Yeah. Oh, it's
They're
Pixar?
Getting really good. What is that mood one? The one with the different moods.
I have kids.
I don't know. Those two movies really show a very creative way of how our emotions are, or like where we go when we are in our creative space. It's like they did a pretty good job, and to explain it to a kid, the unexplainable, that's a good start, I think. To like
how they make those core memories,
yeah,
you know, and then they lose that one core memory. Yeah,
I can't remember. Dude, it's so good.
Yeah,
we could look it up.
Are they trying to indoctrinate kids somehow?
I don't think it's like from a negative space. I think it's like, I would think it would go the other way, but I think they're really trying to teach people about their like mental health.
Have you seen those videos about people exposing what cocamelon does to kids?
Oh,
it gets pretty dark. I don't know.
Like, all of a sudden, like somebody flashes on the screen, they're like, kill your parents.
Something like that. But they'll turn, like, do you know what cocamelon is? I'm sorry. Oh, yeah. My kids love it too. But there's like this whole panacea of people on YouTube that talk about the negative impacts of what cocamelon does to kids and how it rewires the brain to go against what your parents are saying, or learn how to go without your parents. Because in those videos, like, the parents are in the beginning of those music videos, and then like as it goes on, as the song goes on, the parents disappear and the kids are just walking by themselves. So there's like some psychologists behind it saying like, oh, well, it's like teaching the kids negative things and how we don't need to be around the parents or listen to the parents. It's pretty dark.
It can go the other way though, because you're not going to have your parents forever. Yeah. You got to learn the way.
It just makes you think
independence.
Like, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
It's called Inside Out, by the way.
Yes. So, did you look it up?
Okay. Yeah, I had to.
Inside Out. Watched it a couple times.
Or what?
Yeah, that one. You need to watch that one and Soul, because I think you would like it a lot. Like,
Amy Poehler voices that main chick in Inside Out.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of Amy's.
You like Parks and Rec?
Ish.
I didn't think you'd like her.
Ish. It's like another thing you have to get into, and I never really got into. I was like, I'm Seinfeld and The Office.
Hold on.
Oh yeah.
Do you like Seinfeld?
Yeah, he does.
Yes.
Fuck.
So, yes.
So when I was in college, I used to not like Seinfeld, and then my roommate was like a diehard Seinfeld fan, and I was like, man, fuck Seinfeld. Like, this show's weak. And
hell yeah. See.
No, he's about to see. He's about to see his butt. No, then, no, butt. Then
he got. You know, he like forced me to watch it, and I remember it was entertaining, but it's kind of like my wife likes Everybody Loves Raymond, and man, I just can't really get into it. Like, I don't like as much as she has. I mean, I do like, you know, Friends, Office, Parks and Rec. What am I watching right now? Game of Thrones, the dragon one.
Yeah. You have to devote time to like Parks and Recs and like Seinfeld. You have to like fall in love with the characters. You got to get to know the
characters. Yeah. That's where part of the jokes and the humor come from, is like understanding the character and why that's funny. Like on Parks and Rec, have you seen it?
Yeah, so we're a big Office, and then we get into Parks and Rec, but we just not like The Office. Oh, so it's funny when I watch it, but I just don't go looking for it.
One of the hardest times I ever left, I think, watching the show was when Andy Dwyer was polishing Ron's shoes, and Ron like came.
Like, I don't think I've seen that one.
But I know the characters enough to know that's pretty damn funny.
Yeah.
They have really good characters. Like Ron Swanson. Andy is just like, golly, you can't see that he's like in Jurassic Park and stuff now. He's just like, totally, I like the different part where he's talking to the doctor about wiping his ass. And he's like, it's like there's a marker. It's just, I just keep wiping and just, it keeps.
See, that's
what,
funny.
He's like, what I do. And they had those outtakes with that kind of dark girl, and she's like
trying not to laugh.
Yeah. I love, dude.
That's funny.
You can go down a rabbit hole with The Office bloopers.
Oh,
God, I could watch those over and over.
Well, I imagine like being on set and witnessing that, and like what some of those people were like, the guy, you know, maybe holding the boom, like what he was thinking was like, this is fucking gold.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
Like, can't believe I'm seeing this right now.
My wife hates The Office. She just doesn't like it. So, but I'll make her watch it every now and then. And, you know, 10 minutes into the show, she's over there moving the bed and giggling. I'm like, you're laughing. You laugh at it. You think it's funny. Why don't you just want to watch
it? Accept, it's because you like it.
I guess so. Yeah. She's racist.
She's racist.
I could never get into the British Office. I tried to watch that one. Yeah, like, I don't really.
It doesn't hit.
I don't really hit with the British humor. I don't know.
Were you a diehard Office fan after Michael left?
Then I wouldn't say. I mean,
I'm not. I couldn't get into it. It's not the same. I tried.
You watch it because you want to. You know.
I want Michael Scott.
Did you like the ones after?
I did like them. Yeah, I did too. I mean, there was still, you know, but it's just weird without, you know.
Yeah. The main character. It's like watching the Bulls without Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Still kind of entertaining.
Nah, not at all.
Yeah. Well, I think deep inside of me, I want to be part of like something like The Office. Like, could you imagine the relationships those people have? It's like lifelong relationships and all those laughs that they had on set. Like, golly, it's, and then
they got a podcast. The girls do.
All these things are making podcasts.
Yeah, they're all coming back out, and they're like watching episodes and commenting on like
video. Oh,
I remember John Krasinski. You know, he like shit his pants on this scene right here. And, like,
that's got to be tough, man.
All the shows are getting podcasts though, because like there's one for Boy Meets World now, with all the cast doing that.
Gosh, that's a reach.
There's like she's on there. And then there's, bet your ass.
I know.
And then there's the Disney one with like the Even Stevens girl, and then Wilford Ill, which was Corey's brother in Boy Meets World, so they talk about all the Disney shows. So it's like a new thing happening.
Is Shia on that?
That
dude's great.
He's on, he's on another level.
He's on a different level. What happened? Did you see him in Even Stevens, and now he's like this badass that like...
He's like this deep thought, philosophical person.
Yeah.
He did a, I think he has a podcast, or he did a podcast, and where he goes on a couple of good rants.
Where he's outside?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that one.
Those are good.
I think I saw something recently where he was addressing like his mental health or something like that.
Yeah.
Where he was like about to give up and maybe like found the Lord Savior or something.
I think he realizes that like Hollywood's fake. You know, there's all these like, have you seen the news story about Zac Efron where he's like coming out and he's like, oh my God, I suffered severe depression when I was filming Baywatch because I had to eat so healthy and it's hard to maintain. And it wrecked my life. And I'm like, bitch, come wreck my life with that. Like, let me wreck my, can I have that?
I would love to fucking just work out, have trainers and be like, hey Kyle, it's time to work out. Tell me twice.
Oh no, you're pulling my arm.
Are you going to pay me to do
this?
Yeah,
you're going to pay me.
And I'm going to be like in a movie with my shirt off, getting all ripped. So.
Yeah. That poor guy.
That dude was lean in Baywatch. He couldn't have been eating much.
No.
He was real lean.
Well, I mean, nothing bad. No. Like he was eating probably chicken.
He had like the veins in his abs, too.
That's hard to sustain. Yeah. For sure. I mean, I could kind of understand what he's talking about. I've gotten low body fat before.
Yeah.
And it's like, you can't keep it up, man. And you're giving up too much good shit. Like,
yeah.
Queso or something.
Just he knew where to go. He's like, fucking queso.
Yeah. Man. Have you tried living life without queso?
Yeah. I guess you look like you work out. Is that like a big part of your life?
Man,
gotta watch it.
That's part of my, you know, what keeps me sane. You know, I work out my little brother in his garage. We've done like CrossFit for the last 5 years or whatever. And we just started, he started accumulating stuff for his gym. And so now we just get up in the morning. I was over there this morning. Hit one, yeah.
What time do you
gotta get
you
it start? In? I got over there about 5:15.
Yeah, I try to work out in the afternoon, and you know, Mike and I talked about Mike just joined a gym, and he goes at lunch, and I don't think I could do it. I'm so accustomed to working out in the morning.
Yeah,
I'm not an afternoon guy.
I'm there now just because after like having a family, you know, because the evenings are almost like for, you know, your kids, right? You know, so you spend all day at work. And then you come home, you don't want to just like go right back out the door to go work out. So I've become a morning person because I've like had to, either going to work out in the mornings or you don't get to work out at all. And I like it, man. Yeah. You got to keep your body in shape.
Yeah.
With what I put up with at the winery, everything we do there, it almost demands like being in shape. Like I laid 4 pallets of sod the other day, went through like 3 changes of clothes because I was sweating so much. But I'll toot my own horn, man. Like not many people I feel like can do what I do over there. It's I feel like I'm operating out that that wicked level right now.
Yeah, you're focused, man. I feel it and feel your energy.
Yeah.
When I went on a tour, I saw him. He was just like running around. So, and they, all the people I heard were real happy with what you're doing. I guess all the people that were ready to keep on the gas are like, this guy's amazing. He's making good changes. There's like a lot of good feedback.
Well, I mean, yeah, everybody kind of needs a leader, right? Like in a small organization like that. And so I'm kind of the boots on the ground guy. And then we've got Austin, Elrod, Troy Kyle, and then Case Keenum, but they've got other jobs and businesses. And so I'm kind of and my dad always taught me like, you got to lead by example. You know, I was never like the hoorah, hoorah guy to kind of get everybody amped up. I just work hard, man. That's all I want anybody to say about me. You know, it's like, well, what's Kyle like? He just busts his ass.
So you got three. So there's 3 business partners that have that took over the organization?
Myself and 3 other guys.
Mm-hmm. Y'all knew each other well before?
I've known Austin since around like 2008. He was my brother's college roommate. They played football together. And then he was a backup quarterback to Case Keenum. Mm. And so that's kind of how, and then.
Like Case Keenum.
Yeah. Oh, shit. Like he played on the Bills the other night.
Damn.
Yeah.
The other night?
He got in in the third quarter, because they were ahead.
I heard one was a football player.
Mm-hmm. You said Case Keenum, and I was like,
Case Keenum from U of H, him and Austin are tight, and then they know Troy as well through like U of H alumni circles.
Oh, shit.
And Case made a good career, you know, in the NFL.
Yeah.
He's been there for like 10 years now. So, backing up Josh Allen. It's like the face of the NFL right now.
I know. That's cool. So they provided the heavy investments and and you run like the sweat day-to-day operate.
Yeah, sweat equity.
Sweat equity.
That's what makes
the place. I knew you were going to have something clever to say.
I need to start saying that.
Yeah. But you're the main person for Hack, right?
Like I've got like a 10% ownership, and then they own the rest. But yeah, I'm the boots on the ground running everything.
That's cool, man.
It's nice to have like, cause like Austin and Troy, and then, you know, even Case, they've got so much experience as well. And so like when I do haven't something that I haven't been up against, usually it's like on the business side, like financial taxes or insurance, you know, stuff that I haven't really dabbled in. They provide that support. But other than that, it's like I got to figure this shit out by myself.
I bet you're learning so much, and it's so cool to put like your sweat and your tears into something that's like yours. Mm-hmm. And like when you look at it, it's like this is the thing that you made. You know, a lot of people don't get that opportunity with working with corporations. It's like they're helping someone else out, you're getting a check. Mm-hmm. But it's not really like the labors of your whatever that saying is.
Yeah, it's like it's cool to
fruits of your labor.
It's cool to go up to the High Plains, visit the growers, see the vineyard. You know, I'm touching the grapes, and then a couple weeks later, they're in the winery, in the tank, fermenting them. Fast forward a few more months, you know, we're pulling them out of barrel and tasting them, seeing how if they're ready, and then designing the labels, and then you know, bottling comes, and that's kind of the fruition of everything. Bottling is kind of we set a Hack record this week. Tuesday and yesterday combined, we did like 1,200 cases on the bottling line there, which we like blew the previous record out of the water. I want to say it was like 600 cases before that. And that's what I mean. We're grinding, putting the pedal to the metal. And I feel kind of bad, but we had a good team doing it. But bottling is kind of a grind, but it's also kind of the fruition of all that hard work and labor and logistics and planning and all that kind of stuff to have that, you know, kind of final product. And I'll get to take that product and like share it with people and have a good time, you know? So that's what's gratifying that's what I get out of it, you know?
That machine is automated, but it's like, there's a little bit of manual to it too. So I imagine just putting on some like Slim Thug and that little, you know, that little warehouse
and just
going or whatever your taste is. But I could zone it. That's like a drum circle or something for me. I was like, you start getting in the rhythm and working together and you can knock some stuff out.
I feel
out.
Like I could do it all day, you know, but it's also like my product. And so it's different, you know, but when you have people that are invested in what you're doing, like we had a girl, she hasn't been working for us very long, but she loves working there. She's just, we were calling her now the bottling baddie, Sarah.
And, the BB.
Yeah, and she's just, you know, doing the same thing all day long, but she's in it. You know what I mean? She believes in what we're doing, and that's the kind of people that we want working for us. You know, it's like they're on our team, you know, and it doesn't matter how long we're there. She's there until we get it done, you know, and so that's pretty cool to have people like that.
Yeah, that's really good to have employees that have ownership and see like when you're doing good, they're doing good.
Yeah, and you know, I think we still have some people in the mix that you know, they're not so sure if they still want to be there or not, but they're, you know, maybe need a job and we'll see how these next 6 months go, you know.
Y'all had a lot of long-time employees, right? I mean, they were there. Some of them in the beginning, I thought.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, it's hard. It's hard when you're, you know, all of a sudden expectations are higher and the pace is higher. And it's hard to go hard for that long without a break. But I feel like I've kind of just gotten used to it now. And it is what it is.
Yeah. Well, talk to us about this, getting involved with the Renaissance Festival and providing for them now.
Yeah, that was wild, man. It was 2 years ago and we were there walking around and I'm just like, why is Hack not here? You know, I've seen Messina Hoff everywhere and some other little brands. And, so I just started making phone calls and, then we had a wine club member that was going to do a booth and we're like, okay, well, he wants to use our wine. Well, he fell ill. And so that kind of fell apart, but I had already started developing the Hack Miod, and that's the mead style white wine that you tried. And, I was like, well, shit, I've already put all this time and effort and money even at that point, to develop this label. And so I just started calling the Texas Renaissance Festival's offices and left a couple messages. And then I got a message or a call back and they were like, we want to do a wine tasting. And we asked our sponsor to do it, but they declined. And that kind of rubbed the owner the wrong way. The main owner, George, of the Renaissance Festival, I think kind of rubbed him the wrong way. And I was like, well, yeah, we'll do it. We'll do it. And so we did that last year. And last year we did 9 tastings a day. It was like every hour on the hour starting at 10 a.m. all the way till like 6 p.m. Oh. So that was a grind. I memorized like a 5-page monologue. And we capped it at 20 people per tasting. And it was a blast. Like, you know, you go, you hustle. But then at the end of the night, you know, you go out to the bonfire, play drums. Smoke a little bit.
Smoke a little bit. You should have bought some, dude.
Well, I didn't know what the expectations were.
The expectations.
Yeah. We'll do it next time.
Okay. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. And then, you know, so we proved that model successful. We did really well out there. You know, we through the tastings and then we sold glasses. We were able to sell bottles, but the way we had to do it last year was we gave them a card with like how many bottles they had on it, and they take it to the front, those lockers at the front, and they give them the card that coincides like with the wine they bought, and they give them their bottle and they can walk out with it. Because we weren't the sponsor last year, but this year we'll be able to sell bottles, which is, yeah. So 2022, we're now the official wine sponsor. They gave it to us or offered it to us. We accepted, and so now all Hack wines will be in all the pubs and taverns. And then we co-branded 2 wines called the Hugin and Munin, which is the story of Odin's ravens. You know, those are the names of his ravens. So we have these badass bottles, man. You'll see them. They look sick. We just finished bottling everything yesterday. We did all of the Munin, and which is the white wine, and then the Hugin is the red wine. And now I've got it in a van, and we're going to take it up there, make the first delivery.
I love that you made cold calls to him. You just out of, you know, man, didn't know him. You just called him yourself, trying to get in that door. That's cool, man.
Yeah, when you, my dad always said, what the mind can conceive and believe can achieve. So when that's all I get it in my head, I just do it, you know?
Yeah.
I
was going to say, I see why you were talking so highly. Mike was drooling. I could feel the foam kind of out of Mike's mouth when he called me over the phone talking about
just kind of dial it back a little bit, but it's close.
Yeah. I mean, the feeling's mutual, it. Man. The feeling's mutual.
What'd your foam look like? Like
more
a yellow?
More of a drool.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. We're on the same page.
Yeah.
Maybe we're on the same level.
I love it, dude.
And then to get that, you know, the invite, I was just thinking like, man, I've been thinking about this. Like, is it in the ether that we're connected in some way? Yeah.
I thought it was going to be hard to get a hold of you. So I was just, I don't know. I was hard to find you. I think you stay off
social media. Yeah. Yeah. Not on. I don't. I've tried to have like a low footprint, but like stuff with the winery. You know, that's another thing. But personal footprint is low.
Yeah, that's. I think that's a good thing to have. I mean, so going back to Renfest, it's like so Messina Hoff has to be kicking theirself in the ass because I'm sure that's a huge profit, and it's gonna be a huge profit for you guys as well.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if there was a rivalry amongst wineries.
Oh, shit.
I don't, I mean, maybe Messina Hoff and Hack is one of them. And this kind of really stems from like Raymond. I always kind of heard from Raymond about this stuff. You know what I mean? So Raymond's the previous owner and founder of the winery and my grandfather's best friend. And so stories from him, that's kind of where I get the rivalry from. He kind of always had a grudge against Messina Hall for whatever reason, different stuff along the years, where he kind of maybe developed a little bit of a beef, if you could say.
Really?
And they're the only other, you know, commercial winery that's bringing in grapes and making wine on a larger scale, you know, in the Houston market. There's other smaller wineries that might be doing the kind of like where they get their bottles in made somewhere else and they ship and then they sell them. But as far as like bringing fruit in and making wine, we're, you know, one of the, them and Messina Hoff, us and Messina Hoff. Yeah.
So it's cause y'all are comparable that it's, there's a rivalry.
I think, like, so, you know, they started around similar times. Well, I think Messina Hoff may have started more like in the late 70s. Or Ramian always kind of, yeah, had the rivalry with them. You know, always felt like he was making better wines, but maybe they got the awards because they were like, had a little more clout or something like that. You know, some of these wine organizations are, you kind of see like the political side of them. It's kind of like, oh, so they donate a lot of money and then they win the awards. So it's like,
well, I bet you Raymond is proud as shit of you now because you took one of their major contracts.
No, Gladys actually called me. She was like, how the fuck did y'all go to the Texas Renaissance Festival? I was just like, just the right place at the right time, you know? Which ironically her family, the Sheds, actually owned some of that land that the Renaissance Festival is on. So it was always kind of like something she wanted to do was get in to the Renaissance Festival, but Messina Hoff had the lock on it. But
where are they located?
Ganked it. Bryan, okay. College Station area. Yeah,
so they are, yeah, really close.
Mm-hmm. And they've got multiple locations. Like they've got a location in Fredericksburg. They've got one Grapevine. They've got, I think, a new place like in Richmond.
So I didn't know that. That's why I had some confusion. I thought it was just at Fredericksburg, but I didn't think that could be believable because it's kind of a small location in Fredericksburg.
Yeah, that so. Little tasting room over there with they've had like 4 or 5 points of sale of their wines and they're big in distribution too.
Aren't y'all big in the rodeo as well?
We're trying to get big in the rodeo. We had a wine. Oh, that's for the state fair. We're trying to get big in the Houston rodeo. We want to focus on the Houston market. Like this is our spot down here. You know, we've got Case Keenum who, was like a child of Houston when he was, you know, at U of H, setting all those records. I think they got to like as high as like number 6 in the country when he was there.
What round did he go? I don't want to start talking football, but what round did he go in?
Damn, he's probably going to kick me for not knowing this. I want to say maybe the 4th round.
It was.
I could be wrong.
I think it was like a shot because he was supposed to. Everyone in Texas, you know, I mean, everyone in Texas obviously was rooting for him, but
it was. I think it was around the same time. Like, I can't remember who was all in his draft, like Colt McCoy.
Yeah.
Who's ironically, he's still in the league too. And they were both from Abilene.
Yeah.
Case went to Wiley. Yeah.
Yeah. Colt's family is like just outside of Winters, I think. I forget what. It's like a little no name town.
Yeah. It's towards Abilene.
Yeah.
I'm blanking on the name.
I forget what it is, but I guess it doesn't
matter.
Tuscola. Yeah. Tuscola. Yeah. There you go.
Tuscola.
Yeah. It's like you, there's a railroad track and there's a Dollar General and that's it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, did you have something? I'm sorry.
I was just going to get into, like, at the end of our tasting, Raymond was always after the saddle. And I thought that was for the rodeo and it's from Madeira.
In 2019, they won like top winery in Texas. And that was kind of like the cherry on the icing for Raymond. Like he had kind of fulfilled his dream, his expectations of what he wanted the winery to be. He was voted top Texas winery. And we have it displayed in the tasting room. It's up in the rafters.
Cause that's something y'all do really. That's my favorite. Like the Madeira, the Madeira. And what's the one in the skinny clear glass?
That's a Madeira as well. Yeah. That's the Amnesia.
Amnesia.
Yeah, that's in the 375 bottle.
Yeah. So those are, and then, but I heard that it might be kind of rare here for a little while.
Yeah, we've kind of scaled it back a little bit, and we've really had to raise the price just because, like, we can't make as much as we need. You know, it's like supply and demand, right? So it's probably priced higher than it's ever been, but it's just because there's not enough of it to go around. So we thought maybe, well, if we raise the price, it'll kind of like slow down the speed at which it, you know, so that we keep it in stock. That's I mean, it's not a bad thing to have wine going out of stock, but when people are coming to get a certain wine and we don't have it, it's just, it's hard, you know. But the Madeira, yeah. So we're the only winery in the state that can make that style of wine and actually call it what it is, Madeira. And it's because Raymond was doing it in like 2002, and then they passed a law in 2005 saying that unless it was coming from Madeira, that you couldn't put Madeira on the label. But since he already had like a government-approved label,
damn,
then we were like grandfathered in. And I actually have to submit that old-ass label anytime we do like a new Madeira label because it'll get kicked back. We're like, nope, can't do it. And so I'm like, nah, bitches, we can. We're the only one that can.
The wine that Corey like ordered for me when I first went.
Yeah. He always busted out. We're friends with Corey Gaba. Grandson of the Hacks.
Man, next time we do this, we do it again if I get invited back.
Oh, dude.
We'll just smoke and drink Madeira.
I love it, dude. I love it. I'm so excited already. All right, give me the deets, man. Is there really like an art for tasting wine? Like
art for tasting wine?
Yeah, like you know how people like wish it around?
I mean, I guess there's like a...
Can you do all that?
Generally accepted order of operations.
Okay.
Right. So it's like... You know, you can look at the clarity, right? Clarity is something people look at. So as you swirl it, you know, does it look cloudy? You know, and sometimes it just depends on the filtration level that you took it down to. So if you took it down to sterile, it should be very clear, right? But maybe you only took it down to like 2 micron, which is like the level of the filter pad, right? Mm. And sometimes like, if you know, when you're tasting, it's like, all right, if we take it to 2 micron, I like the flavor here, but if we take it to sterile, it loses a little bit of something. So there's a consideration there on the winemaking side. But generally, just when you're tasting wine, swirl, yes, it's, you know, looks good, color looks good. And then swirling it kind of helps open it up, pulls kind of oxygen into it. And as you smell that's what all those aromatics kind of get lifted out when you're swirling it. And then... Some people look at the legs, but that's kind of bullshit. You hear like some of your wine snob friends be like, look at the legs. Oh, look at the legs. And all that is it's the alcohol sticking to the glass. It's less dense than water. So, you know, higher alcohol wines, you're going to really see like thick legs on the glass.
I love thick legs.
Yeah, dude. Me too.
he threw him off a little bit.
Juicy booty.
is that a wine term too?
It should be.
That'd be a good one.
It's just that there's no correlation between legs and the quality of the wine. It's just an indication of the wine's alcohol concentration, right? Okay.
Should be able to measure it, right? Is that bullshit when you do the little and they stream down if you like the spaces between the legs, well, you can almost get the percentage.
Man, I've never heard that one.
No?
You're teaching me something there. Yeah.
Oh, my God. They said it's down to, like, you get it almost down to percentage. Especially, like Madeira, you know how they...
You'll have
those,
to
like,
me,
stay
man.
There for a while.
Did Corey
have
tell
to
you
look
that?
It up. Someone told me, and they're like, this is 12% or something. Dude, if it's real...
That sounds like some bullshit.
If that's a real thing, then, you'll have to show me. That'd be cool.
What about when you drink it and you don't really... taste it, right? Like there's a process there too, and there's a process before you're going to the next wine that you clear your palate. What is that?
So I have a habit of, like, you know, when I sip, I'll kind of like slurp a little bit, which you know, I'm pulling more oxygen in. Same thing as why you would swirl. And for me, it helps me taste the wine completely because it kind of like brings in your olfactory systems. And so, you know, because you taste with your smell as well. right? And so as you're pulling that air in, you're kind of like smelling and tasting at the same time, so you're getting like the full experience of the wine. And then, yeah, swallowing. Nothing there, guys.
Give us a little minute.
It's early, right?
Yeah.
Boy, thought
you haven't been drinking.
Let it kick in a little bit. Maybe
we should have had those mimosas.
Man.
Yeah, the mimosas would be good. That thing you met, I went to a winery, one of those Texas route ones where you take the bus or whatever.
Yeah.
And a guy told me, he goes, if you don't, I forget what it was, like 70% of your taste is in your smell. And he goes, if you don't believe me, eat a strawberry and close your nose. And I was like, well, this guy's full of shit. I came home and I did not taste that fucking strawberry at all. Just close your nose and bite into it. There's no taste.
Yeah.
I did not.
Who'd you do that tour with?
It was an older guy. Okay. I think he had a school shirt on. Like, I think it was UT or something.
Okay.
But he was very confident.
I used to know a lot of those tour guides.
Oh, the guide?
Yeah, like all the guy, the people driving like the tours.
The guy like driving it was like, he looked like a pimp, man. He had all this chains and stuff on. I don't know his name, but he was a good time.
Damn.
Those things get wild, though.
Yeah, I can imagine. I've never done one personally, but if we go back, I probably will get like a driver. It's 290 is dangerous, man. You've been out there drinking wine.
Hell yeah. Talk to me about... are you involved, or how involved do you get in like the growing of the grapes and stuff? And is that like with pest, like with, you know, chemicals being sprayed on them? Like, does that enter your mind? Do you get involved in that kind of stuff?
Man, so my goal is to basically get the best quality fruit delivered to me, in order to make the best wine, right? Because like, you cannot make premium wine, which is what we're trying to do, with like mediocre grapes, or, you know, grapes that may have a little bit of rot or volatile acidity, which is like vinegar basically. So in my personal opinion, whatever the grower has to do to deliver a premium crop to me, whether he's spraying pesticides or herbicides in the vineyard, you know, and everybody follows strict protocols on like when to do that. You know, they're not going to like spray and then harvest it and all that, you know, comes to me with chemical right on it. The people that we've partnered with have been growing grapes for a long time, and they've had like a 20-year partnership with Hack. So it's one of those things for me. It's like, I'm not a master grape grower. I don't try to pretend to be. They've been doing it, like that's their thing, and so I trust them to deliver a premium product to me. And 99% of the time, that's the case, you know. But it's a relationship, right? Like during the growing season, you have these goals of what you want as far as sugar concentrations in the fruit. But you roll with the punches, right? Like all of a sudden there's a hailstorm coming in, or like a big rainstorm coming. Well, you're at 22 bricks and you want it to be at 24 bricks. But if it goes to this rainstorm, it's going to knock it back down to 20 bricks, which bricks are the sugar concentration, like the unit of measurement for sugar concentration in grapes. And so it's just kind of like, it's like a fight, you know what I mean? Like you have a plan going into harvest, and then you get hit between the eyes, and then you're just trying to survive. And that's kind of what the last 2 months felt like.
Is there like a natural roller coaster with how much product they provide over the years? Like, have they seen a dramatic maybe decrease, or is production like higher, or is it just going waves?
It's waves. It's cyclical. It's like the stock market. You know what I mean? Like there's going to be years where your yields are low, and you're going to have years where you have like a bumper crop. Well, all we can do is kind of try to find grapes that we can plant that are kind of tolerant of some of these different obstacles that we face in Texas. Like growing grapes in Texas, it's fucking hard, man.
Growing anything in Texas.
Yeah. I mean, and especially up there, you know, it's drier. They have a lot of wind airflow and stuff like that. The soils are sandier, so there's less like pest pressure in the soil for stuff that wants to feed, bugs that want to feed on roots. But we get hail up there, and we get these random cold spells in like May that, you know, at that point, the young vines are pushing out. And when that cold front comes through, it'll kill that early growth. And we won't have any, like white grapes. Those are normally the first ones that push out. And it can be devastating.
Are most of the grapes that y'all are getting from Texas?
All of the grapes that we bring into the winery are from Texas.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Yeah. We'll, for some of our wines, we shop the bulk market in like Washington or California, stuff that goes into distribution. But everything that we're making at the winery is Texas.
Dude, that's badass.
And the goal is to be completely Texas. But with some of these wines, our margins are so low. Like that we have to find some cheaper fruit or cheaper wine in order to like make a profit, because Texas grapes are expensive, man, compared to other places and other regions in the United States.
In the United States, are grapes the best in the United States? Like as far as, or is that more, that's more California probably, huh?
Well, I mean, California, Washington, Oregon, you know, they have quality stuff up there, but there's good stuff in like the Finger Lakes regions up north. I mean, it's hard to say like where the best grapes in the United States are. I mean, I would argue Texas, but it's a different style of wine that's produced than like what's, you know, it's almost like comparing apples to oranges in a way, to like put a Texas cab next to a Napa Valley cab. It's like they have a completely different terroir, which is like the French term for essentially the soil and the climate and the rainfall that year, all kind of like bundled into one term, the terroir. It's completely different terroir in Napa Valley than we have in the high, mm-hmm. dusty high plains of Texas. So you're going to get a different flavor profile, right?
Yeah.
But people always want to be like, oh, Texas wine is dog shit compared to anywhere else. And it's just not the case. Like we're making good wines. You were there. You were
at the wine. Dude, y'all are getting good. What is that one? Amorche or
Amorcito?
Amorcito. Yeah. I knew I could get you there though.
That's actually
that's a pretty good one. Isn't that fairly new? Ish.
Newish. Yeah. That's actually the best selling red wine that we have, and that one's like one on the sweeter on the scale. You know, it's on the sweeter end.
Yeah.
But that's kind of what people like in this area too.
You gave us it was chilled too. It was like really cold, and I was like, oh, geez. But one thing that y'all do really well too is y'all's wine labels. Like whoever the art person is on that, especially with your Renaissance bottles, like they're just perfect. Who does that for y'all?
So I developed the Miode, but then in November, or I guess the latter half of last year, we hired a marketing duo. So one guy kind of handles more our social media, and then the other, he's our marketing director. So he kind of just anything that we put on out there, he kind of oversees. But he's got a amazing like design background too, and is really talented at that kind of stuff. So like, you know, when I showed him what I wanted to do for the Hugin & Munin, he was like, "I'll get right on it." And then what he sent me blew me away. I was like, dude, this completely exceeds the expectations of what I had in mind. And, you know, so I had mocked some things up, and he was like, I'll get back to you. And then what you're going to see at the Renaissance Festival is his like, design. It's cool, man. It's nice to have somebody like that on my team. 'Cause like, I feel like I have a certain amount level of artistic creativity, but I don't quite know how to like put that into the world. And so to like explain it to him and then have him create it was badass. It's a cool collaboration.
Yeah. It's great. If you go to like Fredericksburg and look at their bottles, it looks like they did it. Like some just random person did it. And it doesn't draw me in, but I mean, y'all's labeling looks very professional, and it like, I don't know, it tells a story about the wine. Even the like the Madeira, I like the little small bottles y'all started making. Yeah, those are, I mean, it's just aesthetically pleasing, like the things that y'all are doing with the bottles, because that's half of it, you know. Yeah. It brings sell wine, but like
trying to get it to pop off the shelf.
Yeah,
a little bit. Yeah,
yeah.
No, it's exciting. And this, the tasting that we're developing this year is going to be unlike anything you've ever seen, dude. It's gonna be tight. And Nestor is the marketing director. He's developing. I don't want to give too much away.
Give a little bit.
Spill the beans.
Don't give it all. Like you mentioned the story, right? It's all about the story.
Yeah.
And taking people through this kind of story. So the tasting that we're doing, my character was basically visited by Odin's ravens, and they bestow a quest upon him to create these wines to represent Midgard amongst the other nine realms. Because Odin's in search of like the best wine in the nine realms. And so, you know, I have to assemble a collective of people to taste through these wines. We select a champion, then we summon Odin. And so there's going to be this really cool visual element of using like LED fans to kind of create this mystical summoning of Odin. And there's other surprises too. And so it's going to be cool.
Sounds like a movie, man.
They're not only supplying wine to the Renfest, but you're adding to the experience.
Right. And, we're a vendor as well. So we're not just the sponsor supplying wine. We have our own booth where we will conduct these tastings I'm talking about. And it's going to be unlike anything you've ever seen.
That's so cool. And to start making those bottles like little collectors, or like having these different things or seasonal things, to where it's like you start getting hyped because I want to get that certain bottle this year, or they have a new one coming out this year. Like so much opportunity.
Yeah, there's room for creativity next year too, you know, because Odin had wolves, he had goats, you know, there's like different stuff that we can do with that. Yeah.
What about the bottles themselves?
The bottle's tight. So it's the Hugin. They're both they're frosted bottles. So the Hugin's frosted black, and then we silk screened the label on. And it's tight. It's got, you know, it's a black bottle with a white raven. It says Hugin on the front. And it's co-branded. On the capsule, the screw cap on top has the TRF emblem on it. And then the Munin is a white frosted bottle with a black raven and black screw cap. It's going to be cool, man.
Who makes the bottles? Like all the bottles? How do y'all get them made?
So I had to buy them from my glass supplier, ship them to Kentucky. That's where they did all the bottle decoration, and then they ship them to me. So this has been a super expensive project, but it's done now, and now we just got to sell it.
It's worth it because, I mean, like I said, the aesthetics of the bottle go a long way. And then y'all are telling a story and it matches. And it's like a lot of people are Odin's Raiden fans too. So like the ones that are that truly get it, it's going to really resonate with them.
But yeah. Well, it's one of those things too. It's like, are we just going to be making wine, or do we want to do something that like leaves an impression, or, you know, leaves like a lasting, you know, memory, right? Something that people are going to talk about. Instead of, you know, you can go to the grocery store and get wine, right? But like, what's something that's going to be remembered? I don't know.
Yeah.
I need to get some recommendations for me for my wife. My wife likes wine, but she drinks, like cupcake or something, like the cheap, nasty ass.
Barefoot. Moscato, kind of sweet.
I've actually had some decent little box wines, man.
Really?
Yeah.
You gotta slap that bag every once in a while, don't you?
Yeah.
Giving some hope out there.
Yeah, I mean, There's some decent stuff that's affordable, you know. Yeah, I want to say like the Black Box Cab for just like coming home and having a glass of wine.
Yeah.
Kind of hard to beat.
I want to go take it to Old Hack.
Come on down, man. Yeah. Let me know. I'll give you the...
I know nothing about wine, so we need to educate us.
Now would be a good time to come, too, because we've got grapes and stuff that we're fermenting.
How long does it take like to grow the grapes, the whole process? What is that?
So they push out in like May, and then we're harvesting them between like August and September.
When are they plant? They're normally planted like March, April, or what?
Yeah, planting's in March, but we really don't start harvesting them for a couple of years. We kind of let the roots take hold. You're supposed to kind of drop the fruit so that the vine puts its energy into developing the root system. And then year three, I mean, they'll produce fruit in year two, but year three is kind of, you know, what you want to wait for, in my opinion. Year two, like I said, you get fruit, but it's really not the best fruit to make wine with.
Yeah.
But it's also hard, you know, when you have like a financial investment in a vineyard,
that's,
and then you've got fruit out there, you're like, let's fucking pick it.
Like, let's do something with this shit.
Yeah, somebody's gonna buy it. But again, like, the goal should be what's gonna make the best wine, right? So that's I always ask myself that question, like, because there's, you know, shortcuts you could take, and even with like logistics, you know, of getting the fruit picked, I always just come back to like, all right, well, what's gonna make the best wine, and then that'll give you your answer.
Nope.
Do people talk to you about, like, there's a certain arrogance among like wine connoisseurs?
Yeah.
Right? Would you agree?
Oh, like, for sure.
How do you like?
Like, people drinking with their pinkies out.
Yeah. And stuff like there's just.
Is there another way?
Like Mike's got a certain arrogance about it.
Pinky out.
How do you like? Do you get some of that sometimes? Do people? I think there's a there's a certain segment of people that are kind of maybe turned off by, like, the population of wine drinkers.
Yeah, when I'm talking about wine, sometimes I can feel myself getting too, like, scientific, and then people's faces kind of start glazing over.
I think you do it well. That's where I was going to go. I was like, you make me want to try wine.
Maybe it's been, like, the practice of it, you know? It's, well, I appreciate that, yeah. But I think there is just kind of a little bit of a stigma when it comes to wine and people who are in that industry.
Why though? Like, what is it? Like, what is it about it?
I don't know. It's just, I guess it is a little bit, there's a taboo about it, right? It's kind of like a snooty element or something. I don't know.
Like, if you're trying
to make wine for the people, you know?
Right. If you show up to a party or like a, you know, like a football game with beer or I don't know, other like margaritas mix or whatever, like, you're cool. But if you show up with wine, it's like you're that person.
Oh, yeah. This guy.
You know what I mean? Oh, I brought a ball. This guy white wine. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I think it's fun, like, because you're like, beer was cheap thing, quickly made. You know, you have to drink 10 of them to get kind of hammered. Mm. So
wine, dude. One glass of wine.
Wine is expensive, just like an old fad, like craft drinks and stuff. There's this, you know, it's fun to, like, kind of dress up, go out. And then you have this wine that was, you know, created, and it's like, you know, make this, like, fun thing where you can, you know, taste a little more, you know, 70% your nose. I mean, there's just, you start learning more about your taste and palate. And
yeah, it's wine's more of a, like, a journey, right? Like, when you're tasting a new wine, it's like, oh, where's this from? Like, have I had wines from this region before? Oh, this doesn't taste like the one that I had before. And yeah, I mean, it's a lifestyle, I guess you could say. It's and like you're saying, yeah, it's just a different beer, you know. Beer sometimes is beer. Actually, I don't want to say that either, man. Like,
if it's like home brewed or whatever,
could be. Because I like craft beers.
Some of these craft beers, yeah, they've gotten pretty unique, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I get it. I get the stigma sometimes, and so I try not to be too scientific or too hoity-toity.
Like that was good. That was good. That got me.
Yeah, because I get crazy in the craft beers. I get those bourbon barrel-aged stouts, and they taste a lot like Madeira. I mean, it's like, it's pretty damn close, or whiskey barrel stout. So I'm not just going to throw down that bottle, and I'm not going to drink it hot. I'm going to make sure that thing is as cold as possible, and I'm going to freeze a cup. And I'm gonna put it in one of those.
So you're making
those 9 ounce cups. Yeah. I'm gonna pour it nicely, and I'm gonna enjoy it.
Because
it's like $15 for like a little bottle. So it's like, I'm gonna treat that a certain way, because I want to be my best me while I'm drinking that.
I should have brought you. There's this Texas Leaguer brewery, and they did a stout in one of our Madeira barrels. So I'll bring out some of that next time.
Yeah. Oh no. That's good. Well, they do it in all these barrels, and a Madeira barrel would be good.
Balcones did a whiskey in our Madeira barrels. They called it Dusk and Dawn. Yeah.
Just another way to make a little money and have a little partnership.
We didn't get any kickback on that. That was just, they gave us some whiskey. That was tight.
Yeah. Sometimes that is what it is. Huh?
Y'all know Balcones? They're out of Waco. They're another whiskey distillery. Yeah.
I need to go check out Waco. Waco's blowing up. There's a bunch of stuff over there.
Waco's tight. Yeah. We went there. What was it? A couple years back, we went to those silos. My wife wanted to shop.
Did you go to the slides? I think they're one of those places with those white slides that throw that. You in there.
Yeah, is that all the videos where people are like flying up in the air and shit?
I want to go. I want to try it out.
That looks awesome.
Yeah.
Where's that? There's a surf park or something like that too. Yeah, where, like, it's like a natural, or not a natural, but a man-made, like create a wave.
Yeah.
That you can surf.
So they have one. I read up on this on the way back to from Austin. Well, we went to Fredericksburg, I think, last week, and they used to have a man-made wave park.
Yeah.
And it's called Austin Surf, I think, L&M Surf or something. And I was like, they made the state-of-the-art place, and I went and visited it when it opened, and then it just shut down. And it hadn't been open since, I think, 2018. And they ended up selling it to Kelly Slater, like the most popular surfer ever. And there's another one, I think, in California. And I started reading, and I'm like, you know, why wouldn't they open this place? It's like, you know, perfect waves all day. It creates this wave and this, you know, man-made lake. And I started reading about it, and someone in California got one of those brain amoebas. And the brain-eating thing, and died. And I think they were having problems in Austin. And so I think the city was requiring water samples because it's just stagnant, like just water sitting, and it's like a perfect area, conditions to have, you know, these bacterias form. And so I think with that design and the one in California, because I think the one in California is shutting down too, they just can't maintain the water to be safe for people being out there all day. So I think they're making one in Australia now that's going to be a couple $1 billion. Damn. That should work. But I'm like, at $1 billion, will you ever make your money back from a surf park? It has to be a passion.
Yeah, I would have to say so. That's a huge, huge capital investment to create a man-made lake that makes that wave.
It's perfect waves. I mean, the concept is great. I mean, it's like that thing in the middle of a lake or man-made lake, and it has just this wall that just pushes the water out, and you can change the intensity if you want higher waves or shorter waves, and it's just a perfect wave every time.
Yeah. I remember back when I was still on Instagram, Incubus had come to Texas, and they were touring through, and like in between shows, they went to that park, and they had it to themselves or something. They were just surfing.
Dude. I
thought it was cool.
That's legit.
Well, man,
did you want to talk about porn or
actually <It's> like that's kind of where I want to get back to.
Okay. Yeah. Let's bring it back.
What, what's your favorite, like your favorite,
I don't watch genre as much anymore, but, I'm pretty basic. You know what I mean? Like, Red Tubit. Or not Red Tube. It's what's it called now?
Pornhub.
Yeah.
Everyone knows.
Red Tube. That's what I grew up on. And that was like early 2000s, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's crazy what it is now. Like the porn game's changed.
Dude. Well, it's not even like that industry is almost dying now because of OnlyFans.
Yeah. And I just learned about that.
You recently. Just learned about OnlyFans? Where the hell you been?
Been making wine, dude.
Yeah. Dude, I live under a rock. Most of the time, man.
I live on OnlyFans.
I'm like a do you have one?
I should. I want to. I thought about it. I thought about doing like a
pinch your nipples on there.
No, like wearing a mask.
Yeah.
Not showing my face and just bearing it all.
I tried when I found out about it, I was like, Rachel, do you want to do this? Like
yes.
My wife Rachel was like, we could, I mean,
why not?
We don't have to show our faces, like
You're
pretty good at this. Like,
just getting a barrel of wine, or though you know how you step on the grapes.
Yeah,
just get one of those,
dude.
Go crazy.
You'd kill it, dude.
Is there like a niche for that?
You can have a special edition bottle from that occurrence.
If people have like
there's a niche fetish for everything, dude.
A fetish for stomping grapes.
Yeah,
there's
it's a feet thing. There's a just get high definition feet
or AMSR. Do it with a dude. Do it in AMSR.
I attempted an ASMR video.
Did you? Like
doing tasting wine. I think y'all can find it on TikTok.
Slurp it hard.
Yeah. Oh, that's somebody told me this isn't ASMR, this is ear rape. Or that was like one of the comments, because I was just like slurping too hard.
You can't overdo it.
You can't overdo it.
You have to drink naturally.
I've had an idea of wearing like the Michael Myers mask and reading offbeat news, the news that doesn't make the headlines, but in AMSR. You know, like the stupid news stories, but you know, a man got his penis got chopped off. A man's penis got chopped off, but in a Michael Myers mask.
Did you see that video I sent you of that girl?
I would watch that.
There's a girl that does it, and she does all this dumb shit, and you can tell in the video she like she's probably makes some money off this, and she has a little boy in there, and they're like, they're messing with some stuff that will sound cool. So there's like a couple eggs on the table, but she's starting with this whipped cream, and she and her boy's being all nice over here. He's probably like 7 years old or something. So she's like, all right, now we're gonna do the whipped cream. She's like, and like it fills up her mouth, and I think the kid just gets, maybe the dad told him or something, and he grabbed both eggs and just hit them on her head, and it just oozed down her. She goes, "What the hell?" And then he makes this noise. He goes, "Ah!" He just screams as loud as he can in the mic, like, "Ah!" Like he has like the veins coming out of his head, and it's the best video ever. I'll have to send it to you.
There's that guy that screams. I'm guessing you're on TikTok. You watch TikTok.
I've seen it.
There's this guy that he has the earbuds that have the microphone that come down, you know, the with the wire.
Yeah.
And he watches videos that that get a reaction out of him. So one of them, like one of my favorites, is he's weed eating, right? There's this guy, he's watching a guy weed eating, and the guy's like going around these crazy curves, and he's like weed eating like really good. And the guy's talking like, "Oh man, you're doing really good. You're doing really good." And then the weed eater like goes in the middle of the lawn and just fucks and like just fucks up the edge and the lawn. And he's like, "No!" He screams really loud, but he does like these little reaction videos that are funny. There's people making crazy amounts of money doing stuff like that.
There's just so much little shit. I've
been seeing all this crazy stuff now, like girls selling their bathwater, like selling their
there's a volleyball
farts.
Quaifs or
farts.
Something like that.
Farts, there's a girl who plays college volleyball, and she just started out, like came out of nowhere. Now she's selling all of her volleyball shorts.
Damn.
Oh my gosh.
She's probably making a bunch of money.
Dude, they got a lot of money.
There's probably like, there's probably porn videos of ASMR just like on you know, just like people like, farting.
Yeah. There's too much shit now, and like even in sports, like we were talking about football earlier. Like the kids in high school are making what they would have made as a professional athlete already. So they're already, you know, you don't get scouted out anymore. You're just famous on Instagram. Like, oh, that's Holly, the female basketball player. And then she's already a celebrity, and like it's just like she can do whatever. Like you market yourself, you're not waiting around for someone to discover you anymore.
That's wild.
So she might not even like someone like that or a person like that might not even have to go play professional sports. The thing that drives me nuts is like, you know, you're doing all this work and doing all this great stuff, but someone could like fart on YouTube and make more than you ever will. Mm-hmm. That's the thing that keeps me up at night.
the farts on YouTube.
That's why. Like, part I smell of me them just now. Like, man, do I need to keep doing this, or should I just start selling farts?
That's what we all should be asking ourselves, and I'm glad you brought it up.
I wonder what my girls are going to be asking themselves when they're 30. Like, what should I do with my life?
Be flying around on a spaceship.
I have two
older daughters. I have one 14, one 12, and then honestly, a set of twins.
Five and three. Mm. You have any kids?
Not yet.
Now that he knows about still,
it. Yep.
The kid will take this room. So,
do you have a significant other?
Yes.
Nice. Yes.
I was up there with her that day.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
she was
the one looking at you for a long time. So, thanks a lot.
Muscles, man. Look at that.
I know.
You look exactly like Mike, but better.
Just a little sexier.
Yeah, like she looked at him. I was like, you know, I kind of look like that, right? And she's like... In your dreams, buddy.
In your dreams. She goes hard too. Yeah. She's like, in your fucking dreams. Yeah.
She's like, Mike, go get in the car. Yeah. And just wait. Yeah. Don't turn it on.
The only reason I tanked up is because driving that short bus and there's the AC doesn't work anymore.
Oh,
so I'm just like
just hot
sweating, man.
Sweating as hell.
Yeah. It's actually I left it running because I got that wine on there. I was trying to keep it cool in there. Yeah.
But you don't have AC, right?
Well, the AC works, but it's stuck on defrost the windshield. So I don't get the blow on me. I've got a jerry-rigged a cardboard up on the dash to like try to deflect some of the air.
That's a good
towards
idea.
Me. Yeah. But the motor that turns it to like blow in your face.
Yeah.
It like went out while it was on defrost.
Damn.
And so it's just stuck on.
Have you tried WD-40?
No.
You should try it, dude. Everything. There's a guy on TikTok.
I should probably look.
He doesn't have TikTok.
Up.
You're a multi-$100 organization. You better fix that AC.
There's a guy on TikTok that makes money. He quit his job, and he just explains the uses and how many different ways you can use WD-40.
Then that's all he does.
That's all he does. And he makes a shitload of money now.
That's crazy.
He's got like 2 million followers.
I would be curious. 2 million followers. Yeah. It's like things you can do with W-40.
Yeah. He zip ties one of them. He will zip tie a zip tie around the can. And you know, the little sprayer, the little straw thing. People, there's a question like, how do you keep track of your straws? He's like, a zip tie. I zip tie it and I put the straw in here. And then he throws he'll throw whatever he's doing. And he goes, next. And that's the end of the video.
Oh my gosh. And you're contributing to this shit.
Yeah, I subscribed.
Okay.
What does he say on like his Tinder date or whatever? When he's like, so what do you do? He's like, I mean, what does he say? What do you think he says?
He says, what do you think I was going to use for lube?
Damn, dude, that was shit. Boom. That was good.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah.
Was every good. Once in a while.
Every once in a while, he'll fucking put one in my house.
Yeah.
I always just thought it was like you could burn ants with it in addition to.
I didn't know that.
Lubrication.
Yeah.
You can clean your stainless steel appliances too with it.
You can clean your phone with it.
Yeah.
So this, you learn this from him. So yeah. He's doing something right in the world. He's contributing something to
society. You spray it around your window seal and you'll keep bugs and ants away from your windows.
Dude, what is in it? See, instead of like smacking mom or whatever.
Question, yeah. Nobody's asking that, right?
I'm going to go
What's
ask
in
them
WD-40?
What is in WD-40?
WD-40.
It does everything. Clean you out. Colonoscopy, that's what they use.
Oh, do you take a...
It should. That I put I put that shit on everything. The damn hot sauce took it. It should have been WD-40. Could you imagine?
You're getting good.
Yeah, different product. We should better shut this down before I get too good.
We're getting really good. All right, man.
Are we close?
Yeah. We're good, man. So how can people follow you? Where are you located? Facebook, Instagram, all that good stuff.
You can't find me. Except for at the Renaissance Fair at the on the weekends in October and November, or you can come out to the winery during the week. I'll be there. Come out to Hack Winery. We've got badass wine. We've got a cool venue. We've got music on the weekends. Royal Delights, who I met at the Texas Renaissance Festival, has taken over our kitchen, so they're providing all the food, and they've been outstanding. Come see us. Come get a tour. You got to come out.
Come out, man.
Bring the fam. Yeah. We don't have a lot of stuff for kids. We had a playground at one point, but the hurricane like mangled it, and we just got rid of it. It was beyond repair. And like I said, I have a low digital footprint. So
what's the Hack's got an IG page though too, right?
Yeah. Okay. Hackwinery.com. Or Hack Winery is the Instagram handle. We're on Facebook. They started a TikTok as well. That's where that ASMR video is. And,
let's go check that out.
I'm gonna go look at it.
I was told it was a good first attempt, but and maybe we'll do another one. We'll see.
Yeah.
Well, man, but we appreciate it.
Appreciate y'all having me out, dude. This was fun. Yeah. How long has this been? How long were we talking?
A little over an
hour and 18.
Okay.
Time. Yeah.
Does it feel like it?
No, I went by pretty fast.
Damn, dude, we're getting good at this.
You blink, man. Wait until you take these headphones off. You're like, where the fuck was that?
I got to head north to Todd Mission, deliver this wine. Thanks for having me, though.
Yeah. Safe travels, bro.
Thank you.
We love it, man.
All right. Bye.